Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 80, Text 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shishupa Uvacha. Krishnasya Sitsaka Kastit. Brahmano Brahmavitama Virasta India Teshu Prashantatma Jitendriya. Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Krishna had a certain Brahmin friend named Sudama, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from sense enjoyment. Furthermore, his mind was peaceful and his senses subdued. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmin once approached him. Her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows. Purport, according to Sridhar Swami, the chaste lady was especially unhappy because she could not obtain food to feed her husband. Further, she was fearful to approach her husband because she knew he did not want to beg for anything other than devotion to the Supreme Lord. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksurun Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Gushtam Napitam yena bhutale Shayam rupa kadamayam dadati sapadantikam Mancha kalpa turubhyascha Vipashindu bhayebhacha Vakitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Advaita Gadadha Vivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from New Jersey. Yesterday I was in New York for the day to attend the six-hour kirtan and also speak. Really wonderful to see so many nice people. Okay, so Marge Cricket wants to hear if there's anything more. Of course, that's the symptom. Bhakti, that you have love in your heart and it manifests in the desire to chant and the desire to hear. And they're exactly commensurate with your bhakti. And naturally that's the main symptom of advancement, that one is enthusiastic. And he wants to hear more. He's already heard the 10th canto, heard so many stories, but wants to hear more. Vayam natu vichipyatma uttamishloka vartate yishindvatanasa gyanam svade svade pate. Never become tired, because it's rasa. It's an elixir of love. One second again, I don't have it. Okay. Oh, okay, yeah, I got it. It's an elixir of love. Uttama shloka vartate. These transcendental verses, yachrindvatam rasagyanam, you're hearing the rasagyanam, the understanding of love, an understanding that touches your own heart. So advanced devotees, they always want to hear. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Mark Prabhupada, he said he likes to hear. He likes to hear. So he says, I want to hear further, and then expresses his realization that not only the ears, but all the senses are ultimately meant for serving God, because we're part of God. And really, the main purpose, really the purpose of this life is to become self-realized. And what is the self? It is a servant of God. So the purpose of life is to actually come in contact with ourself. That's the objective. Come in contact with ourselves, our real self, so that we can live eternally, because you can only live eternally in that which is eternal. The real self is eternal. So unless you embrace that and understand that, you're in the world of temporality, you're in the world of duality. And therefore, when we act according to the soul, which is chanting and hearing, which are the symptoms of the soul, we move towards eternality. And we begin to experience it in a way that gives us some solace. Because the temporal world, it's filled with the duality that what I am embracing, what I am doing, is disconnected from the real self. And therefore will end at a particular time. What is liberation itself? Liberation means to remove all that which is external to the self. You can't remove that which is inherent to the self. So when you brace that, there's no fear. But anything beyond our Nitya Dharma is artificially connected to the self. Artificially connected to the self in the sense that it's imposed on the self. And therefore, it needs something else, some other conditions to maintain it in relationship to self, besides the self itself. It's not part of the self. So there's always that question of fear. So when one becomes realized, gets some understanding, he understands that the senses are of no use or even detrimental when they're not connected to that goal, either to directly serve that goal or to satisfy the needs of this mind and body in a way to stabilize ourselves for that goal. So he makes all these points, Maharaj Cricket. And then he Sukadeva Goswami is responding, but he's responding from a platform of complete absorption in the absolute reality, because that's what the true devotee means. He wants the truth, and therefore the truth wants him, and therefore he's absorbed in the truth. And absorbed in the truth, he realizes the truth, and therefore he can explain the truth. And therefore one who hears from such a person can understand the truth. So, absorbed in that way, he begins to, reflect on a particular story. And it's so wonderful because already the 10th canto has been given. So the culmination, the full manifestation of rasa, of the absolute reality and what it really manifests in its fullest extent, which is God's intense exchange of love with his energies, which are put in the hearts of those devotees who have placed themselves at God's service, fully in heart. So Sukadeva Goswami begins to tell this story, which in eagerness we will listen to extract or be gifted with the realization we need to support our meditation on Krishna's pastime, just like in the Bhagavad Gita. The bhakti section is in the middle, and then comes the jnana section. So the bhakti section is important, but the jnana section, the knowledge and detachment, will help us stay on that platform. But here, of course, this is all rasa, this is all bhakti in different degrees and different flavors. So Sukadeva Goswami begins to explain this story that a very, very elevated soul who, in a material sense, is in a very, very distressed condition, but has a different value system. Important. Those who are advanced have a value system of consciousness. They base their value, their happiness, their self-satisfaction on the state of their consciousness, which, for a person of that level, is not dependent on the material situation. Even though the material situation may be distressful, it doesn't have the effect of depression on the consciousness. That the person has a perspective of view that's broader than the particular unfortunate situation that they're in. When you base your happiness on the environment as the ultimate objective of what will make you happy, then you're unhappy when your things are going your way, and distressed when they're not going your way, and unhappy when they're going your way, fearful that it will not go your way soon. So here's a very exalted soul. And he's vittama, he's very, very learned, and he's detached, which means he's confident in Krishna's will. He sees the world moving around him as Krishna's will, and therefore sees every circumstance as an equal opportunity for service, with it, which is his objective. And therefore that person is equal in happiness and equal in distress. So it's described, he lived with whatever came of its own accord, because that was his dharma. He was a Brahmin. Varnashram has different occupational positions, and they're based on one's level of detachment. The Brahmin has full detachment, because he's not going to work for anybody. He doesn't need to have any land. And he doesn't need to manipulate and try to control various goods and services. He just teaches and depends on God. And because ownership of land and management in business to some extent compromise one's ability, any attachment you have compromises your ability to speak the truth. Because if you have an attachment, then those who know what you are attached to can control what you say by manipulating the objects of your attachment. If you're not attached, you will be controlled. A Brahmin is very, very rare. There's so much fear in us of losing position, losing reputation, losing endorsement. Very, very rare to find a person like Jayadvaita Swami, who's completely detached and can speak what he wants. He'll speak the truth in any circumstance. Very rare to find a person of that level of detachment, honestly. So, and others, not just Jayadvaita Maharaj, but to me, he's always the exemplar, at least historically, within ISKCON. I'm a person who's always sided with truth by speaking. So he maintained himself whatever came of his own accord. That was his dharma. But his wife suffered. She was hungry. So, generally speaking, when one is a Brahmin, they'll experience that by depending on Krishna, one's needs are met, and one doesn't have to endeavor to control the environment. But even if one's needs are not met, one has the faith that Krishna is taking care of one on even a higher level, which is the matter of consciousness. The symptom of faith in God and one's relationship with God as the an ultimate support of my being is in that relationship, one feels completely protected. Will do its best, which usually means God will maintain this. So there's so many, I see so many people, and somehow or other, devotees, their needs are met, their whatever it is, troubles are there, but somehow everybody. But sometimes God understands that somehow or other there's something deeper. And ultimately the maintenance, Krishna is, Lord Chaitanya is Vishvambhar. He maintains the universe, but ultimately what he maintains is the consciousness. Pativrata patim praha malyata vadanena sa ridram siddhamana vai vipamana vigamyata. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmin once approached him. Her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows. Purport, according to Sridhar Swami, the chaste lady was especially unhappy because she could not obtain food to feed her husband. Further, she was fearful to approach her husband because she knew that he did not want to beg for anything other than devotion to the Supreme Lord. So this is the culture of people. You know, when you see relationships, they don't work out in the modern world. Basically, the main reason is, there may have other reasons, the main reason is that people are self-centered. And therefore, in the relationship, they're focused on conforming the other person's life to their needs. Rather than working on their own problems, what to speak, conforming themselves out of love to the needs of another. The people are always trying to change someone rather than to change themselves. But here, this lady was chaste, loving, and she was begging, but not even on behalf of her own condition, but on behalf of her husband, because cultured people, evolved people live in the world of love, and the world of love means that one thinks of others. One thinks of the God before themselves. One thinks of friends before themselves. One thinks of family before themselves. To really experience love, you must have some social unit where you have surrendered to the goal of the unit, like a family. I mentioned this many times. In a family, it is an opportunity to experience love if done properly. How? Because one, it's not about you. All of a sudden, you have to think of others before yourself. And if the family bonds in a proper way, then everyone in that unit, then they surrender to the needs of the family before themselves, knowing that that unit is a unit of love that serves their needs better than they that can serve their needs. If the unit is serving their needs better than they can serve their individual needs, especially in terms of heart. So this is culture. And she becomes fearful to serve her, to approach her husband, because her husband has that relationship with God and only wants to serve God and doesn't want to ask anything from God for oneself. That is called pure devotion. Anyabilashita shunyam jnana karma jinavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakta uttama. Anyabilashita shunyam. Anyabilashita shunyam. There's no other desires. Of course, our natural desires for self-preservation and reasonable bodily urges do not disqualify us from pure devotional service, but there's no other motive. You have no other motive to serve. That is real love. To the highest love, there's no thoughts of oneself. In the love of Radha and Krishna, it becomes a point that one is so focused on the object of one's love and the prema of that love that one has no cognizance even of one's own identity. That's how much one is absorbed out of love. So when we're hearing about these pure devotees, they have such a deep bhava of love in their hearts. They really have love. They're out of this selfish condition. They're thinking of God, not themselves. Me, 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 me. I need, I need, I need. They did, they did, they did. I need, they did. They don't think. And we should look in our own lives in a humbling way. How much our lives are absorbed in reflections. Just one second. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back here. Practical example, I'm staying at my mother's house. So my mother had called, so I had to drop everything to see what she wants. So it's really a shift. And this is a very, very advanced level. When the heart has become completely receptive to the position of love and the energy of love. So, but the wife also has love for her husband. So she's concerned. You know, I have this here. And we create an environment a very beautiful environment where everybody is immersed in the ocean of love. That's what Sangha is. It's a joint effort to serve God and to serve others as part of God. And it becomes an ocean of love. And it allows you to step out of the center and to serve this community that's serving God, and in serving God, serving the members of the community. It is such a relief. It's such a relief when the desire in your heart comes to serve the prasadam before eating the prasadam. And any spiritual community will not become successful unless people buy into that idea. But it entails a giving up of one's ego, because that ruins the community. When someone tries to control the Sangha with their own desires, rather than surrender to the needs of the Sangha, which is serving everyone in that Sangha. We hanker for the community of love. So somehow or other, these people are living in that. Sudama's wife said, Nanu Brahman Bhagavata Saha Sakshat Shyapati Brahmanyascha Sharanyascha Bhagavan Satvata. O Brahman, isn't it true that the husband of the goddess of fortune is the personal friend of your exalted self? The greatest of the Yadavas, the Supreme Lord Krishna, is compassionate to the Brahmanas and very willing to grant them his shelter. So now the wife, because she loves her husband, she knows her husband's mind. And she knows that he's so humble and he's so selfless. And so free from any desires from entitlement. Sometimes even people like this have to be cared for by others, because they're not going to think about themselves, and then it becomes our duty to think about them. Even Lord Chaitanya, Vasudev Dutta, was so humble and pure, but he assigned his manager, Shivananda Sena, to kind of take care of his account. So she knew her husband would say, why should the Lord be kind to a fallen soul like me? He's very humble. He doesn't think, I deserve. He just doesn't have that ego that creates this vision that the environment should conform to my desires. The environment should conform to my desires. Where we think, what I think, I deserve this. Where is this? Where is my facility? Because I am so senior, because I am sannyasi, because I am guru, because I am devotee, I am Prabhupada's disciple. I am whoever I am, and whatever designation I am, comes a demand of how that environment should move around me. But the pure devotees don't have that. why should the Lord be kind to a fallen soul like me? So she says here, Lord Yadava Krishna, he's compassionate to the Brahmins. And then she say, he'll say, but I have no, I'm not, I have no devotion. And she says, Bhagavata, you're an exalted personality. And then why me? Krishna's equally devoted. Samaham sarabhuteshu name dvashya sanapi. Krishna is equally disposed to all suffering. So she'll say, Satsvata, but he's especially disposed towards his devotees. Krishna is responsive. He doesn't have the defect of impersonality. O fortunate one, please approach him, the real shelter of all saints. He will certainly give abundant wealth to you, such a suffering householder as you. Aste duna taravatyam bhogavishyandachekara svaratapparakamalam atmanam apiyachati. Kimvarta kaman bhajato natyaspishtam jagatpuru. Lord Krishna is now the ruler of the Bhojas, Vrishni, and Andakas, and is staying at Dwarka. Since he gives even his own self to anyone who simply remembers his lotus feet, what doubt is there that he, the spiritual master of the universe, will bestow upon his sincere worshiper prosperity and material enjoyment, which are not even desirable. So Krishna's ruling all these dynasties with so much wealth. So if there's any acknowledgement that he's Krishna's friend, and Krishna is the ruler of all these dynasties, why will they not give him what he requires? So Sudama's wife is thinking, even if Sudama went to Dwarka and simply remained silent before him, why will he not give shelter? And why will he not give him abundant wealth and shelter at his lotus feet, which is his real desire? Especially since prosperity and material wealth ultimately, not very desirable. On the high platform, what's desirable is what brings us closer to Krishna. Wealth can do it, poverty can do it. Although sometimes and usually when we have material facilities and money and power, it easily fosters the illusion that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. But what's desirable is happiness. And it's a state of consciousness. Happiness is not a state of the environment. Although the environment can facilitate happiness, it's not the state of happiness itself. Satevam vayaya vipro bahusha patito mohu. Ayam hi paramo labha uttama shloka darshanam iti sanchintya manasa gamanaya matim dade Abhyasthyapayayam kinchit grihe kalyani dhiyatam. Sukadeva Swami continued, when his wife thus repeatedly implored him in various ways, the Brahmin thought to himself, to see Lord Krishna is indeed the greatest achievement in life. Thus he decided to go, but first he told her, my good wife, if there's anything in the house I can bring as a gift, please give it to me. So, initially, he did not like the idea of asking for something for himself. It's of love. It's just like that mother that loves the child. I've heard of mothers who, when somehow not enough was cooked and the children were asking for seconds, and then the children out of love said, oh, but you have to save something for yourself, mommy. She says, actually, I'm not very hungry today. That's what love means. That ultimate platform of love. You're focused on something beyond yourself, which you're part of. So he didn't have that sense for himself. But the opportunity to see Prema has three symptoms. You want to be with the object of you want to serve the object of your love. And you want to have a relationship with the object of your love. Primarily, you want to serve, and because you want to serve, you want a relationship, and you want to be with. So naturally, that's within the realm of love, and he wants to go. But now, is there any gift? I love the culture. And I have a distaste there. Because by God's, Krishna's fortune, I lived in India in the late 70s, where I saw the rich remnants of that culture. And it created an impression in my heart of how important, how beautiful it was. And even in a cultured household, people really make you feel that their house is your house more than it is their own. It's the culture. And it's reflected in every way that people's samskaras, their desires for others, are greater than the desires for themselves. Because they're in a culture of love. Modern culture goes the other way. People look at everything in terms of their own desires. And guests, therefore, are generally not welcome. Even among the modern Vaishnav culture, much of it. It's just a particular viewpoint. It's unfortunate. I remember Vrindavan in the, we were all staying there in the early 90s, mid-90s, myself and my friends, Mal Krishnamaraj, Giriraj Swami, Borijan, Of course, there were different god sisters there. We were focused on chanting and hearing, nourishing our consciousness. The culture of love was very profound. People were always, you know, beautiful gifts to give others. And sharing prasad, it's part of their consciousness. They live in that world always thinking, what can I give to others? Living in the world, what can I give to others? Always thinking, not in the way to endorse their own need to be needed, but a legitimately beautiful culture. It's natural and the hearts are satisfied in Krishna consciousness to appreciate those who serve God. So naturally, he's thinking, I cannot go someplace open, empty-handed. I love, you know, when I'm in Russia, that culture is still there much more than it is America, I could tell you that. It's amazing. Whenever I have a program, you know, and people never come empty-handed. It's just the culture. It's just completely part of it. It's like you go to the deities. You know, that was the culture. You know, you bring a fruit. In fact, I'm thinking if I go to the Bhakti Center, I shouldn't come empty-handed anymore. I should bring some fruits for the deities. If we want bhakti, we have to have the culture of bhakti. And I'm marveled how Prabhupada would train people. Tell them, you should bring something when you come to the deity. Because it's their house. Just as Sudama is going to be, he doesn't go empty-handed. We should not go empty-handed before the deity. Such beautiful instructions. Okay, we'll end here. Are there any questions? Would anybody like to say hello, please?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh.
Who's that?
Mooney and Gail.
Mooney, you go first today.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that because I'm going to have to leave in a minute anyway. Do you hear me
Super
okay,
Super Soul told me that. Super Soul told me we have to leave.
I really appreciated your class today, Maharaj. I mean, I guess as usual.
Thank you.
You reminded me of something that... I've really been influenced by that I've learned from both Aristotle and Confucius, and it's about child rearing. And I think it ties into what you're saying, and I thought I would just put it forth to see if you're interested in talking about it. But basically, the way Aristotle puts it is to be a good person, you have to be able to recognize certain moral truths, like that it's good to be other-centered, and that it's good to sacrifice for things that are important. But he says that unless you're raised to do that just by habit, you know, he said, children, you just try to habituate them to be like that, even though they don't understand it. He said it's only when they grow up and they're young adults that you can then teach them philosophically why this is important. But he said something pretty profound to me, which is that, but unless they're given the right habits at a young age, they won't be able to have the capacity to understand in a deep way why this is important. And it just, so I guess against this background, I'm horrified sometimes that I know people who have been swayed by a kind of parenting where you just give the kid everything even if they're horrible. I think it's called attachment parenting. And it strikes me that these kids are, it's going to be very hard for them to experience love. Because they've never been taught that there's things better, bigger than them that they can give their hearts to. I mean, eventually maybe they can. But I guess, anyway, Marge, I'm just reflecting in my own mind about how training and being habituated in this way ties into our ability to ultimately be able to recognize love. So I don't know. I'm just putting this out there as something
I just want to comment on that because it's samskaras. So unless you have a taste for that, and the taste is not the central experience because you're sacrificing something, but it's the consciousness of mind. All these things elevate mind, or you get values. People that do, you get a samskara for it, and it's a fact. Unless you have that samskara for it, that attraction for it, right? It becomes much more difficult to adopt, and it's not very natural, you know. And therefore, when you see the Indian families that have that, you know, when you see the Indian families that have that, you know, it's easy for them because they already have some kind of affirmation or taste of it. In that regard, I was at the 24-hour, the 6-hour kirtan. When I sat down, who was sitting next to me? Abhijit Manu. Nandadulam Savitri's son. Right? And I have to say, I did notice, you know, I don't want honor as a sannyasi. When I sat down, I saw that Manu was the first person that offered me a seat of his own. Otherwise, I was probably, it's not in the culture. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You have to have, it's the same thing, you know. It's not in the culture. The people don't think those ways. I've seen that so many times. Honestly, sometimes I see something in Radhanath Swami. He's, you know, renowned all over the world. He'll come, you know, into the kirtan, sit down, you know. you know. I'll give him my own seat because I grew up in India. That's the culture. At least you're acculturated there. Or I'll see Advaita, the Ravel's father, you know, get up, old man, you know, take off his charter, put it on the floor. You know, it's the culture. And you have to, you know, yeah. But in that being said, you know, we have to train people in the culture, just like when we were at Tuaco. We tried in some ways, you know, to get a taste for those things. Anyway, I appreciate your comment. One other thing you wanted to say?
Well, may I just add one thing, and thank you, Marsh, for those thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
One other thing, too. It was so nice visiting Satyabhama yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
Krishna Mohan's wife, and, you know, and anyway. Go ahead. Anyway, what were you saying?
Good example. So just one final thing. I appreciate your thoughts, too, because I know myself, it's like I recognize my own lack and my own need to kind of have, like, remedial training and selflessness in adult life. you know, it's funny because, like, as modern Americans, we like to think that, like, we can debunk the old mythologies and stuff. But you know, thinking about things like movies or songs and contemporary American media, we have American mythology, and you can see, like, there's a standard story that you'll see in a lot of movies, and it goes like this. Young person does something because he or she wants to, even though the parents don't think it's a good idea. And then the end of the story is the parents realize, we were wrong, and your life worked out. I mean, that's always the story. Like, you don't see the story where the kid ruins his life, right? the mythology is, be independent, do what you think, don't sacrifice for something greater than you, you know, unless it's maybe your own sense of your personal ideals at best, and it'll work out. It's best. And so it's just like this is so ingrained in our cultural ethos that it's a challenge sometimes.
It's so ingrained. It's so ingrained. People just don't get it. It's just embarrassing, I have to say. People just don't get it. I was reflecting, too, in Advaita's commentary on the Yoga Sutras, right?
Yeah.
He was saying that most of the philosophy of India was presented in these Puranic stories, right?
Yeah.
And I forgot, he made a comment that the modern scholars, you know, minimize that. But if they actually understood it, the context of transference of values, they should really pay more attention to it. You know,
beyond looking at it
as what appears to be mythological or fantastic, or, you know, that there must be something there. Yeah. Anyway, it was real nice. The function there, it was nice to see my niece came, there, and many nice people came. And you know, I generally feel everyone has a seva. You know, so I like to speak and lecture, et cetera, like that. So that's kind of my seva. When I'm in an environment like that, there are so many great kirtaneers that I generally don't push myself forward. But you sort of do, I'll insist it, of course, that I speak and then do a little kirtan. So, you know, I did a little kirtan, and then afterwards some of the young people said to me, you know, and I noticed, you know, they say, wow, the place really rocked or something, you know, something like that. And really nice, sincere people said that to me. And I saw, you know, what I felt is you know, it's kind of like the people had compassion on me and they were rooting for me. But it kind of worked, you know. I look,
no,
people were really enthusiastic. And then I also saw, you know, I turned to Ananda and I said, you know, you're so good. He's at playing the Vedanga that, you know, you can make anyone a good kirtaneer. You know, it was good. It was a lot. It was such a nice. It was a nice mood there, and it really was a nice mood there at the place. That was good. Okay,
well,
Monique,
forgive me. May I say one thing before I run, Mark?
Yeah.
Getting back to the notion of child raising and developing these qualities. I mean, to me, I don't want to embarrass them, but I mean, when I think of, Yashoda Dulal's family. I mean, there's people who don't put themselves in front, but you could see
Nanda
by the...
Nanda Dulal.
Excuse me, Nanda Dulal.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. But the Chargies from my old Kuwako memories. You know, to raise children who are devotional but balanced and sane and intelligent, that's not easy.
Yeah.
And I think that, I think that sometimes there's people who, they're not going to be pushed to the front, but you could see by what they produce that that they've done something pretty remarkable. Anyway, on that note, Marsh, I have my own dharma to attend to. Take care, Marsh. Thank you. Thank
good.
You.
Good. Okay. Hi, bro. Good. Gail, you wanted to say something?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Yeah.
Hi, bro.
Is there still time, or should I just say hi, bro?
You can ask one question.
Yeah, I was just... you know, because Sudama Brahmana, you know, is so selfless, I know he didn't want to approach Krishna for himself, you know, but being as sensitive as a selfless person would be, you know, I was wondering how that sensitivity was expressed for his wife's hunger.
I was actually thinking the same thing. I was actually going to bring it up myself. I guess, you know, he probably had sensitivity, but at the same time, his sense of love for God was so hesitant to ask God for anything. You know, and it wasn't that, you know, he was enjoying and his wife was not. They were both in it together. And he was just accepting what it came at his own accord. I guess that's a certain level of advancement where you just depend on God. And what he gives is that. And that was his duty as a Brahmin. His duty as a Brahmin was to be dependent on God. And so he was very, very hesitant. And as his wife knew, he felt so fallen. He also felt, why should God favor him personally? Those things were there, you know, that he wasn't really worthy of it. God, you know, is kind, is equal to all. Why should he favor him? So his wife was aware of his consciousness and the saintly things. And I can just see that in the mood that they, you know, they were both very simple. And but they had the idea that they're somehow they're objects of God's mercy. And this is their lot in life. And they're doing their duty. And what comes by God's accord. So I think that was his consciousness.
Yeah, one thought I had while you were speaking, though, is that, you know, the devotee, he sees everybody as a part of God. You know, he's not seeing his wife as something separate. So I still feel like, you know, he could have approached God for the sake of his wife in a selfless way. You know, even accepting, you know, I don't know.
Well,
it just seems like it would have been more compassionate.
His wife understood his consciousness. He just was a very, very humble person, very part of his nature. And, you know, Krishna was the king. He didn't even expect, you'll see later on, to actually get by any of the guards. You know, it wasn't just such a simple thing. He didn't even think he had access to it. It's like someone say, why don't you go to see the president that was previously your friend? And now he's the president, you're just kind of like, you know, something like that. So there were many, many factors at play. It wasn't just like, you know, Facebook, my friend, you know, hey, Krishna, you know?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Can you support my project, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was something like that. Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
So nice to see your children. They come down every
blessing,
6 hour kirtan. They come down there. Great to see them, you know.
Maharaj, you have enough time to take one question?
Yeah, one question, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I'm just echoing in Mother Gail's question. That's also in my mind, you know. But besides that, you answered that question. But related to that is in the ninth chapter, Krishna tells, Ananya Chintayanto Mam Jayajana Paripashate, Tesham Nitta Vijuktanam Jugakshama Boham Maham. Did you get that?
I got it. He carries what we have. He preserves what we have and carries what we lack. And I guess that's what happened. Right? Krishna did reciprocate. That's the end of the story, too. And it always says that he teaches the world through his devotees, just like the mother teaches the daughter-in-law through the daughter. She doesn't have a relationship with the daughter-in-law now, has moved into her house with her son. So sometimes she chastises the daughter, even if the daughter didn't have anything wrong, to teach the daughter-in-law. So through the devotee, Krishna teaches. So these devotees took that role of poverty to participate in a certain moral story that Krishna's Leela would manifest or demonstrate. Okay? Thank you, Nandi.
Thank you, Maharaj. That answered the question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
That's Carl and Stella?
Yes, hi. It was a wonderful class. We were really, really absorbed in it.
Thank you. I'm very happy. I like this. I really feel enthusiastic to teach this story. It's a great story, you know. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice to hear from you. Thank you.
Adios.
Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello? Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, for today, that'll be it. Hare Krishna. Vanshakalpa, Truvya, Sakhita, Sindhu, Vyayavichapa, Pitanam, Pap.